This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Dear John, you were the chosen one, the only one, the one that I loved. I had a poster of you above my bed, and now you're a snake pajama boy. Mike, now it's your turn to do your Dear John.
Oh, I didn't know we were doing this.
I don't like warning you.
Dear John, your decision to take advantage of a free market and be employed where you wish to be employed as someone who is of tremendous skill in your field offended me so much that I chose to vandalize your jersey along with several hundred of my peers.
Dear John, I've taken every bagel that I found and stomped it into oblivion.
That's just a waste of bagel.
Especially a Long Island bagel. So two things I want to say about the whole Tavares thing. First of all, and I can't believe I'm saying this on a Rangers podcast, absolute hats off to Islander fans. That was the pettiest NHL building atmosphere environment I have ever witnessed in my life, and I am fucking here for that level of petty. These people in a 6-1 game in the third period were viciously cheering every time he lost the faceoff draw. It was incredible. I mean, hats off. You know what? You had your moment. Like, you lost the battle for sure. You lost the war. But you won that one battle. That one battle, you got the best out of it. So, that was cool. There's always something grungy about the Coliseum, too. It's just like a, I don't know if dirty is the right word, but it kind of feels like just a more authentic, just insane environment. And, Yeah, that was pretty cool. It really was.
My biggest takeaway from it, and it's very hard, like I, in the banter Slack, we were talking about, like, have the Rangers ever had something similar to this? And someone mentioned, Messier going to Vancouver, and that was a kind of a weird thing to wrap my head around when I was a kid. Leach got traded, and it's not the same thing, because really, in most situations, we're the Toronto. We're the team that's able to bring in those guys, and, you know, the influence of the Rangers as a hockey club is pretty profound and widespread. It's not quite, you know, the Leafs in terms of, you know, the proportion of Canadian players and how many of them grow up under the church of the Maple Leaf. But, like, looking at that video, because I made a point to watch that game, and they're waiting for that first even strength whistle to play the tribute video, and the fact that they kept the boos going during Tavares' visits to hospitals and, you know, like, seeing sick kids and stuff, and I was just like, I mean, sports is just a different sort of thing.
It's stupid. It really is.
And, like, I found myself both impressed and also disappointed, but also completely understanding and empathetic with what happened. And I think my favorite moment of it all, I mean, the chants were hysterical, but my favorite moment of it all was Tavares acknowledging the crowd, because there are still enough people who I think were being respectful, or, you know what, I shouldn't say respectful. You can do whatever the fuck you want if you're a fan, so long as
you're not. Outside of the throwing things at Tavares. Yeah,
throwing the jersey during warm-ups.
I have no issues with what happened whatsoever.
Yeah. But the fact that the Islanders team saluted him the way they did was classy, and the fact that Tavares saluted the crowd I thought was pretty classy, because can you imagine, Joe, lining up for a face-off, knowing that if you lose, that many people are just going to be it's insane. Shit.
And it's the other thing that, like, you can't appreciate the context. You and I can't appreciate the context. We're a little bit closer to it because we witnessed it to a direct division rival. But you can't appreciate what they've gone through. And, like, that was the perfect storm of shit to get to that point. You can't appreciate that. You can't. And the Rangers, in the instances where you would even begin to say, well, you know, Messier is a comparable or the Leech trade, the Rangers did it to themselves. They didn't give Messier money. They traded Leech.
Yeah.
There's no comparable.
It's a different, and I feel like I got my first impression of that when I went to a Blues game at Barclays, and without exaggeration, one third of the Islanders jerseys I saw were Tavares jerseys that had like blue tape over his name, and it would just like someone just took like white out or something and just wrote traitor on it instead. Like, there were more vandalized like Tavares jerseys than there were jerseys of a lot of players that I thought might be more popular in terms of, you know, having their jerseys around. And it's a weird thing to kind of let that be something that defines your culture, is just like this extended middle finger to this player. But I can't really understand what they must feel like. That's a, yeah, it's a different
animal. We can't
animal.
Appreciate that. Here's the other thing that I find astounding, and I find it even more astounding that it's March and this just broke with that game. I believe it was Larry Brooks said that John Tavares was going to sign with the Islanders. And his agent begged him to take the meeting with Toronto. And he did it out of a professional courtesy, and they blew him away. He saw Lamoriello, he saw Trotz, and he was like, oh, I'm totally on board for this. And his agent was like, no, listen, you need to meet with Toronto. Just meet with them. Just hear what they have to say. And he walked out of that meeting, and he decided to be a Maple Leaf. So, whew, that is just...
Yeah, man.
That is something special. We're 6 minutes in. We haven't talked Rangers at all. I apologize. This is Bantering the Blue Shirts. My name is Joe Fortunato. I'm your host, joined as always by my co-host, Michael the Killer Murphy.
Killer?
Well, you're killing it sending out those stickers.
Yeah, that's not... I mean, I just lick an envelope.
Well, you're doing it great.
Everyone who gets a sticker in the mail, you have... a trace amount of my DNA you can
that you could utilize somewhere. To build. If you have a cloning machine, you can a cloning bay. You can just
I could splurge and get those like you have the Peely sticker envelopes, you know, and that do the licking for you. But
nah, there's really no per. You want to lick your own envelope?
Did you get yours yet?
No, I have not, and we need to discuss that because that's a load of shit.
Well, I made a special trip to the post office for you.
You fucking better have, you son of a bitch.
Bitching and moaning.
There's not a ton going on in Rangers land right now. It's such a weird...
We have new people to talk about.
But before, like, it's been such a strange... The Rangers legitimately had Tampa Bay on the ropes. Tampa Bay's an NHL favorite.
That was the Rangers, very interesting, that game.
They got crushed in the Corsi game by Washington. But the Rangers, like, they don't look out of place in a way. There's a lot more feistiness to them. They're doing the good grit where they're hitting guys in the corners. They're going after the puck. They're not, even Zibanejad said, like, it's not about fighting. You know what I mean? It's about being tough to play against. And
I'll tell you, Joe, these
here's
kids,
my question for you,
these
Michael.
These kids play with heart. These kids work their tails off for you.
As
going to corners and they battle, they bleed for each other.
Here's what you're going to do. You're going to watch the game and you're going to drink the moonshine that I've been brewing in my basement. Moonshine. And you're not going to be able to see the television after long, but you're going to enjoy yourself. And that the Rangers play like a pissed off moonshine drinking.
Why did you sound like, you sounded like
son of a bitch.
Like a doped up Christian Slater. Like,
because I'm on, I
didn't like it.
Well, it is what it is.
Do you know who Christian Slater is?
I think I do, but I don't want to take a guess and be wrong.
All right, well, I'm
is he a drug addict?
Well... That's a strong accusation. I don't know.
I don't know either. He may not be who I'm thinking of.
Well, we just put that out in the ether now. I hope you're happy.
No, the Christian Slater is not a drug addict. No, this is... See, immediately, this is not at all who...
Do you see what you've done?
Not at all who I thought you were talking about whatsoever. So I got it wrong. Got it wrong.
He was in Kevin Costner's Robin Hood.
Yeah, no clue. Definitely not. I have no idea who this man is. I know nothing about him.
How many times are they going to remake the goddamn Robin Hood movie, by the way?
Well, apparently a million, till it's amazing.
Just doesn't go away.
What was I in the middle of saying? Oh, here's my question for you. Babies. No, I have a question for you.
Okay.
We've debated a shitload about Quinn, right? And developmentally what he's done, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Now, we have seen some things surface that have made a little bit more sense. We learned that there were some behind-the-scenes issues with D'Angelo. Philip Hedl did a Q&A or like a response to Larry Brooks and kind of explained that he did sort of plateau in terms of his work ethic and whatnot. We're starting to realize, at least it seems, that a lot of the decisions David Quinn is making that you and I have complained about on this podcast have been more about him sending a message than anything else. We're witnessing the Rangers play a far more bought-in level of hockey, something I feel very safe saying we have not seen in years. Do you think that Quinn is making his mark on this team?
I feel like that's...
Hashtag bantering points.
I feel like it's been there for a while, that mark was there. I think I got that impression when he said, I'm going to go ahead and sit Kevin Shattenkirk. To make that kind of decision when it's like everyone kind of understands, you know, Shattenkirk and Quinn know each other. They have a relationship. They had one before he became the head coach here. And that was something to me where I was like, okay, you know, he's sending a message here. And I felt like that was also established in a significant way with the Ryan Strom trade because, you know, Quinn understood, I think, that, you know, the Rangers had Ryan Spooner and they signed him for 2 years for $4 million a year. And when Spooner didn't fit into Quinn's idea of how he wants to play hockey, he just rode the pine until he was dealt. And you know, you look at what this team has become under him, and I feel like it's ironic, but like with the guys like Zuccarello and Hayes out of the lineup, I feel like we're getting a better idea of what Quinn's real definition of physical is. And he's been talking about physical hockey all along, and you know, he's also been a guy who's not always talking about, you know, getting in fights, but he does talk about, you know, finishing checks, finishing your shifts, and skating hard. And, you know, from some of the footage we've seen of him at practices, you know, he is a guy who will, he doesn't go off like, you know, he's crazy. He'll just demand that they do things again and do it at game pace. He demands that they work hard. And so it's not surprising to me that some players along the way, Joe, have kind of gotten in the doghouse for slacking off in practice, whether they be veterans or whether they be kids. And what's interesting, because I wrote about the, something, you know, that's kind of tangential to this for banter, talking about David Quinn and the mentality of playing to win. Because, you know, there is a portion of, I think, Rangers fandom that is just, why can't this team just play the kids and lose games and then we get a lottery pick? And I feel like it's a dangerous kind of thinking to embrace the idea and go into the locker room with, listen, we're going to have fun, but we're going to lose. And we're going to each game knowing we're going to lose. I don't know what kind of impact that will have on the development of players in a locker room, especially in this coach's first year. And he's trying to establish that. He's trying to figure out, you know, how can I, you know, get my culture instilled in this room? And this has been Quinn's Rangers for a while, and that's why I wanted to bring that point up, because he's definitely done things his own way. Think of how long we've seen Brendan Smith playing wing now. Think of how long we've seen, you know, the Rangers have, or how many games, I should say, we've seen 7D get dressed. And, you know, it makes me understand a little bit better, I guess, some of the stuff I was questioning earlier in the season. It doesn't mean I forgive him for, or just give him a pass on everything, because he has made some...
No, we definitely... that's not the point of the question.
Picks. No, I know. I just wanted to add that as a little, you know, little postscript there.
The more purpose of that question is to just be like, hey, listen, that's, you know, this is what I think, is sort of what we're tailing towards. We're getting a little bit more of that behind-the-scenes information. The D'Angelo stuff, you and I were clawing our hair out on this podcast, and then as soon as the stuff came out, it was like, oh, all right, that makes sense, and D'Angelo has been fantastic.
I can't really claw my hair out.
Well, you know what? Do you have a beard?
Yeah, I have a beard.
So then you can claw your hair out.
Of course you know I have a beard. What's wrong with you?
I know. Well, the people may not. Yeah, you didn't think of that one, did you? They can't see you. We're not doing live podcasting. I am naked right now, though. Completely naked. Top to bottom.
Does it make you feel like a big man when you put me down like this?
I'm not putting you down. I'm just... The people don't know how beautiful you are. They haven't seen you.
This is how you have to be a big man.
They haven't seen what you look like, the beauty in your eyes.
I call you big Broadway Fortunato with your big website and all your friends and your little verified Twitter, and you put me down and you think it's fun.
Well, you know what? This is the way that it goes. I feel like Quinn has left his mark on this team, and I think he realizes in a way that you and I maybe weren't prepared for in the rest of the world, that I'm going to make decisions that are stupid, quote-unquote decisions, from a play style standpoint, and a who should be playing and who shouldn't be. And the reality is he's doing it because he can, because this season means nothing, and he knows that, and everybody knows that. This season is a developmental season, and you and I look at development, and we say, well, he should be playing. Hedel should be playing nonstop, and Buchnevich should be playing nonstop. Well, you know what? Buchnevich looks like a completely different player right now than he did in the beginning of the year.
And D'Angelo definitely looks...
And D'Angelo definitely does, too. So maybe I'm the idiot. That's totally possible that I'm the moron.
It does not surprise me in any way that David Quinn knows more about player development and coaching than you and I do combined. Of course he does.
Well, I've developed quite a few players in my life.
You've developed my broken heart, is what you've developed.
I've developed your love and affection. That's what I've developed. I've developed a dog and a baby. So... There's that. Kalen is a fantastic hockey player.
You made sure to emphasize baby.
Baby. Just a baby out there playing hockey. It's fantastic. Okay, well, you pretty much answered what I expected you to and what I kind of felt like. Quinn has gotten maybe not enough ups, if you will, for the career year that Zibanejad is having and the career year that Kreider's having, and he deserves a lot of that, too. Because he's obviously a part of it, and they were not making those steps under Vigneault. But we might see Vigneault in Ottawa, who knows, over the summer. So, speaking of, not Vigneault, but D'Angelo Hedel, you want to talk some Tony D?
Yeah, it's D'Angelo.
The long D streak?
Yeah, for...
Of points?
Rangers radar on the banter. I have fun looking at trends a lot with stats and stuff, and D'Angelo kept adding on to this career best point streak, and I think it got cut off at 9. He had 9 points in 9 straight games. All of them were assists, as it turns out. And then against Montreal in the game that you pointed out very accurately, they just got you were talking about Washington with possession, but
son of a bitch.
That point streak came to an end in Montreal, and then he picked up another assist the next game. And what's been the most important thing during this point streak, I mean, it's great he's picking up points, Joe, but D'Angelo has now played 9 straight games, I think, where he's averaging something like 22 minutes of ice time.
One half of the Rangers' best defensive pair by the coach. Yeah.
In the last 9 games, only one game did he dip below 20 minutes of ice. And, you know, against Tampa Bay, he played 26 minutes, and that was a career high for him. And that was the other game where Mika Zibanejad had, he also played north of 26 minutes. But, I mean, that's a far, far cry from a kid who couldn't crack a lineup.
Yeah,
just couldn't stay in this lineup, and I think a big part of it has to do with him showing what he needed to show to Quinn in terms of maturity, and I feel like maturity is a kind of an all-encompassing word here. It's not just, Tony, for the love of God, don't turn it over in your own zone. It's also his behavior as a professional hockey player, his behavior at practice, his behavior in the locker room, And those things, unfortunately, are factors with Tony D'Angelo. That's just reality. That's kind of the, you know, the player that the Rangers agreed to take on in that big trade. And I feel like something that Quinn deserves a lot of credit for is maybe you're salvaging a real NHL player here with D'Angelo. It's still early, but I mean, what we've seen in the last 15 games, Joe, there's...
I think you're getting more than just an NHL player. He's on pace. Valuable. Yeah. If he played in 82 games this year at this current pace, he has 24 points in 46 games. That's a 43-point season. For a 23-year-old defenseman who, for, I would say, the first half of the year, either could not get into the lineup or when he was in the lineup was playing minimal minutes. And only recently has he kind of been pushed to the PP1 unit. And you're talking about a guy who has, 24 points in 46 games. As a flip side to that, since we keep going back to this unfortunate, I guess, flip side when it comes to just what we've seen from Mr. Pionk, you're talking about a guy who came out of the gate flying. He has 21 points, Pionk does, in 51 games. And Pionk had what? He had like 20. I feel like he's had 20 points forever. So... it's a huge, if the Rangers, the whole point, and we discussed this as far back as this summer, you know, on the forum, you play Pionk and you play D'Angelo because you have to figure out what you have in them. You have to figure out what they are. You need to figure out how you can use them. And D'Angelo has proved that he can be a top four defenseman for the New York Rangers. And at the very worst, a power play specialist. But he has been, I think, downright fantastic for this team, and one of the few bright spots on this just barren desert landscape of the defense.
He's leading all Rangers defense in scoring. And I know that, you know, Shatty missed some games, but like, and you know, Shattenkirk for a long time, and this feels like one of those things, the longer I pointed out, the less, you know, weight it carries, but the amount of time he spent not on that top power play unit, Shattenkirk, I mean, definitely took a big bite out of his production, but he also has been picking up some points as of late. It's worth mentioning, but the fact that D'Angelo has done this to the point where I don't think, you know, even some of, I think, feel like Neil Pionk's biggest advocates will acknowledge that D'Angelo is right now just better than Pionk in every conceivable way.
Literally every way.
Yeah, I can't think of an aspect of...
on the ice, because Pionk is probably a better off the ice.
Yeah, I would imagine. But the only other thing I would say is I would imagine that Pionk has the benefit of not having a bad reputation and definitely doesn't take kind of dumb after-the-whistle penalties like D'Angelo can and probably will still do for the rest of his career. But other than that, if we're just talking about being an effective defenseman and moving the puck and quarterbacking a power play, D'Angelo has him crushed. I mean, he does everything better. Everything.
I think he's, yeah, it's not even a debate at this point. And there's somebody who, I think like 2 weeks into the season, shot me a note and was like, hey, when are you going to admit that you're wrong about Pionk and D'Angelo and D'Angelo being the better player? And all we heard about this summer from a lot of the beats, I mean, Rick Carpinello for The Athletic was a big one who just really believed that Neil Pionk was the better defenseman, that he was going to be the better defenseman. And a lot of that comes from the fact that there were no off-ice issues. Pionk had like a dream 20-whatever games last year. He put up, you know, 0.5 points per game. I think he had 14 points in 28 games last year. And everybody was like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And you and I and a bunch of other people and bloggers and whatnot, we just kind of looked at each other and we were like, well, his numbers were terrible. And that's not shocking because the Rangers were terrible. But that's definitely something to keep an eye on. And we've seen a very similar Neil Pionk this year. And Adam wrote a story about it, but when I've mentioned this as well, when Pionk was putting up a point a game or a point every other day, you could look past the deficiencies in his game because, okay, he's a one-way defenseman. We said it on this podcast. He's a one-way defenseman. There's nothing wrong with him being a one-way defenseman. But when those points dry up, there's no safety net for him. D'Angelo, I think, has at least found enough of himself defensively that he hasn't been a tire fire. And he's actually been an above-average defenseman. And his possession numbers are fine. And I mean, like, above 50 fine. And that makes a huge difference, because when you're not scoring, okay, there's the tangible look he's doing his job aspect of things.
He's in the same points per game neighborhood this season, I just looked it up, as Werenski and Shea Weber. He's doing better in points per game than, you know, Gostisbehere. It's not too surprising because he's having a bad season, Ghost. But doing better than Dougie Hamilton, doing better than Ryan McDonough on that crazy Tampa team. I mean, 0.52 points per game. There's nothing to sneeze at. It's a really damn good. And as you said, if you apply that to the 82-game season, that's north of 40 points. That's a guy who is just coming into, you know, his real NHL career here. And it's no secret that this Rangers blue line has to be a focus of this rebuild and the guys they find. And D'Angelo thus far, I think, especially in the last 15 or 20 games, I mean, it's not just this point streak. It's the other little parts of his game. It's the fact that he's been able to stay in the lineup and kind of pass that test that, you know, everyone in this lineup seems to have to pass under Quinn, you know, with the exception of a couple of veterans, but, you know, we've talked out in the ground. But I wanted, Joe, to transition, because you're bad at hosting shows, and talk about Libor Hájek now, because he recently made his NHL debut. We knew coming into his debut that his production in Hartford was incredibly meek in terms of, you know, what kind of points he was putting up. You know, just 5 assists on the season in Hartford, despite leading all rookie defensemen in the AHL in games played. And
can I just say, you know, it's sure. bad when the team calls up when the team calls up a player, and like the stats that the Rangers give
yeah,
up the
I stat noticed
right,
that too.
They're like, hey, he's played the most games of all defensemen his age in the AHL, and then they talked about his World Junior Championship statistics from 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and you look at it and you're like, oh yeah. boy, like if you know what you're looking for, that's a terrible. Here's yeah. another thing, and I feel like before we even get into the Hájek stuff, we need to discuss this.
God damn it!
I've seen a no. It is about Hájek. You fuck. Yeah, fuckity fuck. We've already seen a lot of the, well, in the nutty hockey places, he's been called a bust. And some of that has to reference us, because we've been relatively hard on his AHL year.
Oh, yeah.
Some of it has to reference some other blogs who are doing similar things and making similar comments. And here is, again, the reality of the situation. You're not doing your job as a reporter. And in this instance, some of these things are being said not by other people in the Twitter like verse. We're talking about legitimate credentialed reporters. Is you're not doing your job if you can certainly say, hey, the kid's 20 or 21. He's having a bad year in the AHL. The AHL is terrible, but he's certainly not progressed the way the Rangers and him expected. And that's fine. I don't think anybody, even if he said, like, I think too much stock is being taken in his AHL season this year, that's fine. But nobody's insinuating Hájek is a bust. We're just saying that today, a year after the trade for him in the first place, he has not looked very good.
The organization wanted him to.
This is not what anybody was expecting. And props to Larry Brooks, who actually had the wherewithal to write that type of a story where he shed more light on the trade that I didn't know. Apparently, the only way to get Hájek included in the deal was to trade JT Miller, which leads me to believe that it was Nemestikov a first, a conditional first, and Howden for McDonough, and then Miller for Hájek, I guess. But the Rangers did so much back padding about Libor Hájek that it was very difficult not to assume he was going to be more NHL ready than he was. And the Wolfpack are terrible. The Wolfpack have issues up and down the lineup. Adam wrote an entire story about just how dysfunctional the Wolfpack are. So there are plenty of reasons why you could look at Hájek's struggles and say, well, yeah, but that's happening because of this and that and, you know, X, Y, and Z. Totally fine. But let's also call a spade a spade. Lieber Hayek is not where the Rangers wanted him to be 1 year out. There's no way that they would want him to be where he was. And he's come up to the NHL and he hasn't looked terrible. And everybody's pointing at that, at like, hey, look. Come on. Nobody, at least call it both ways. You could be upset that there's that much maybe microscopic focus on him. But when you throw a parade for getting a prospect in a trade, it's difficult not to look at him in that lens. And yeah, he shouldn't worry about it. The Rangers should keep it. Quinn talked to him about it. Like, they're doing all the right things now. But when you put that much pressure on a kid from the onset, you have to expect this level of criticism.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, like, for the people who might be saying, you know, look, we're looking at a two-game sample size. In his second game, he played under 13 minutes. He played 12-something. His shot share is right down the middle. I think he's split at an even 50. And he's taken a penalty. He's put, I think, 3 shots on net. And the biggest thing for me that I've been trying to pay a lot of attention to is, how does he do with the things that I consider to be the biggest factors in the jump from the AHL to the NHL, which is the speed and the strength of the game, the physicality of the game. And he's made some plays where I was definitely impressed, and I came into it thinking, you know, I wasn't more or less kind of like, you know, the deer in the headlights kind of thing. It's tough when you're his age and you're an NHL defenseman. I mean, some of the highest, most highly touted prospects in the world, you know, and he's not that guy. He's never been that guy, you know, have those first rocky couple games. And, you know, he had to play, you know, the Hagelin goal in the Washington game where, you know, he went down and blocked the shot and it bounced right back to Hagelin, and then Hagelin scored on Georgiev. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where, oh, you know, it's a kind of a crappy welcome to the NHL moment. But overall, it's he's been fine. The thing with that is, we're talking a 2-game sample size, and we're talking about a kid who in the AHL was used as, you know, the way that Keith McCambridge was using him. You know, I spent a lot of time looking at the numbers because I just don't have enough time to watch every single Hartford Wolfpack game. I only get to watch, you know, one out of every dozen games that get played, and I just try to find highlights when you can. For whatever reason, the AHL.com doesn't post a lot of the game highlights from Hartford. I don't know why. It always bums me out. But looking at, you know, what he did there, he was deployed as, like, you're a penalty-killing defenseman. He played a lot with Chris Biegris and Brandon Crawley, who, you know, have definitely were not in terms of the ideal partner for him, for guys to pick up points. Like, if he was playing with Gilmore, it'd be a different story. Gilmore is, last I checked, had 16 goals. But the thing that stands out to me, Joe, about Hayek's numbers is that at even strength, he was getting decimated in terms of his goals for percentage, the goals for ratio, and goals against. And that doesn't mean he's a bad defenseman, but there are a lot of little signs where you say, oh boy, like, he's not scoring, he's not picking up points, not even secondary assists. He's not getting a lot of shots on net, and he's getting smoked in terms of how often opponents score when he's on the ice. And I feel like that's not an unfair foundation to raise questions and be like, all right, well, is this kid where we want him to be?
Right, and part of the thing that you need to remember too, he has 5 assists in 58 games in Hartford. And Adam ironically wrote a story about this as well. Like, even the most
mediocre,
borderline, not even mediocre, but borderline NHL defensemen, right?
They produce in the AHL.
Even the defensive ones do.
Yeah, historically, if you're an NHL-level defenseman in any regard, you're going to pick up points if you're in the AHL.
It's incredible where kind of he's been and what he's come to. And look, again, I'm certainly not trying to shit on the guy. He's looked fine in preseason. I thought he was fantastic. That's the funny part.
Yeah,
he was a shot machine.
He seemed like calm and composed, and I was like, all right, you know, there's a lot of little, and, you know, of course, when you watch preseason, you always take it with a grain of salt because, you know, it's preseason. It's sometimes you face lineups that are, you know, not as good as an AHL, a good AHL team. But, and then again, the team you're playing isn't always there. So I look at, you know, what we've seen from Hájek thus far, and the answer is the same answer we have for everyone, really, on this blue line, who's under, you know, I would say 23 years old, is we need to see more of him. We need to see him play in different scenarios. We need to see him play with more ice time with different defensive partners. And, you know, if he continues to play, you know, relatively solid hockey, then we can be very excited. And I feel like we should be excited that he's had, you know, kind of a quiet but solid enough start. And, you know, I know some of his teammates were singing his praises. And, you know, I think even Hank was saying some positive things. Neil Pionk was saying some positive things about, you know, how he's adjusted to this. To this level of the game. But I mean, what did we see happen to Brett Howden, Joe? What did we see happen to so many players? I mean, what's happened to Brady Shea's game?
Right. We've had to just
questions to ask.
We've just had to like take our expectations and bring them from up here, and you can't see my hand, but it's all the way up, to down here, and you can't see my hand, but it's like in the middle. So it's just a different. It's a different conversation. If Hájek turns into a third pairing defenseman at this point, I think that's going to be a win for the Rangers. And again, that information is being based off of what we've seen so far from him. The reality is that like he could maybe explode onto the scene next year, and we don't know. But
it's still very early. He's 20 years old.
But these projections, they're fluid. They're fluid in the sand, and you can't see, but I'm making a wavy motion with my hand.
Well, you're doing a lot of hand bullshit for a podcast when you're giving me shit.
Well, I'm both naked and hand stuff is happening.
Oh, and you're eating a cookie.
There's some phrasing issues. I was eating a cookie before. Delicious. We made a batch of cookies last night, and I put them on two different cookie trays, and the same tray, but they were two different trays. And one of the cookies burned horrifically. They went in at the exact same time. The other cookies were cooked perfectly. So I have no idea what happened.
So you know a lot about developing babies and dogs.
Yes, but not cookies. I see. What happens is I was yelling at the cookies and I was benching them, and then they burned.
Oh, let's see what you did there.
That's right, bitch. Okay, bitch. Final discussion.
Uncalled for.
I'm going to take my hand, and I'm going to slap you.
I'm going to stick my tongue out. I have to get a handful of tongue.
Brendan Lemieux. Three games with the Rangers, one goal, 14 penalty minutes.
And he apparently told Max Domi that he fucked his sister.
So I saw a little bit of that. Do people have an issue with that? I'm trying to figure out what...
I mean, I don't think people... I mean, it's... One, it's kind of classless, but two, it's
but that's also
what he does.
I feel like
worse things are said in every single game.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, if that was true, and I saw the gif of it, like, do you really think that like Joe Thornton or Brad Richard, you know what I mean? Like, think of people who you would think of like elder statement of the game. No. You don't think they're talking shit like that?
But my whole thing is it's what the reason I brought it up. The reason I thought it was noteworthy at all is just because. The last time you and I were talking about what kind of player he is, and you know, we kind of didn't even mention that, I think, or did we? I don't remember the fact that the Rangers might have another kind of Sean Avery prototype.
Correct.
And that's, you know, from the early and small sample size. Speaking of sample sizes, from what we've seen from Brendan Lemieux, he's exactly who I thought he was. He seems to be able to skate better than I thought he might, but, you know, he is very much straight line. You know, he's just ready to plow through people. You know, it's three games now with the Rangers and 14 penalty minutes, so... And also 11 hits in those three games, and in the last game he only played 8 minutes, so he's not wasting any time.
But here's the other thing.
Himself and what his role is going to be here.
If you walked into this with the expectation that Brendan Lemieux was going to be a third-line winger at best... A Sean Avery at best, right? A pest. He's blown away expectations. And granted, I'm looking at him when he's on the ice. Every time he's on the ice, I notice him. He's in front of the net. Even the penalties that he's taken that I would consider reactionary have not been like ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like somebody just going out of his way to do something stupid because he wants to impact the game.
He's a Brandon Trust. He's a Sean Avery.
And if he is that, it is something the Rangers have not had in a long time, and it's something good. He's been in front of the net. He's crashed the net. He's going to score dirty goals from there. If you walked into this assuming that he was nothing more than what he is, you're not upset by this at all. And I think he's been fantastic.
I feel like he's filling his role.
And that's all he needs to do.
And that's all he really has to do. He's definitely, like, I'm not saying this to sound condescending or snooty or anything like that, but like he's not my favorite sort of hockey player. With that being said, I completely acknowledge and embrace the truth in that these guys can be valuable and they can play the game in a style that helps your team. And I look at Lemieux thus far and I say he's definitely noticeable. He's definitely pissing people off. I think the big thing for him is, you know, there's a lot of aspects of his game that Quinn is going to love. The big question is discipline and maturity and not taking stupid penalties. But so far it's never really seemed to be an issue for him. He's generally very good at drawing penalties, and players who do that are valuable. I mean, we talked about this last time around, too, I know, but like, it's been a really strong first three games in New York for Lemieux. He's been noticeable and a factor in all the games he's played, and I really don't mind the idea of the Rangers having a guy who plays his sort of game if he's effective and, you know, can be a guy who's cost-controlled. And, you know, so often when we think about this rebuilding team, Joe, we get wrapped up in the, oh, God, they got to find a top-six winger. Oh, God, you know, they got to find, you know, that complementary center to play with Zibanejad. But you also got to find the guys like Lemieux, those players who can fill those middle six role, right? I'm a middle six winger. You know, if there's an injury, he's a guy you could kick up to your second line or maybe to spark the second line. But otherwise, he's going to live on your third line, do his job, piss people off, draw penalties, get a dirty goal every now and then, and that's your player.
And that's all the ring. I happen to love. I love Sean Avery. I loved him. I thought he was a great player. He was fun to watch. He made the Rangers fun. If Lemieux can be that, that would be perfect. And the more important part for me is if Lemieux can be that, the Rangers won't sign the Tanner Glasses of the world and the Cody McLeods of the world. And that's important too.
Then why did they trade for the Derek Bougards of the world when they had Sean Avery?
The Brashears, it was a different time back then.
Oh, is that the
yeah? That's what I'm gonna go with.
Yeah, that's what you're gonna go with. You know what I'm gonna go with is the back of my hand to your cheek, giving me lip.
You know what? This is once again the violence that I've come to expect from this podcast.
You threatened my life.
I did not threaten your life. I may have threatened your penis, but I didn't threaten your life.
That's uncalled for.
This is what it was. I was going to slap.
You're raising a young daughter in this cruel world.
I absolutely am, and she's being developed with lots of ice time and love.
What does your wife think about how much Kaylin looks like you? She's just like a little clone of you.
Well, she's beautiful. Kaylin is.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that you'd say that.
Which means I'm also beautiful. Are you saying that my daughter is not beautiful?
No, I'm saying she's beautiful. I just happen to find that to be remarkable, considering how much she looks like you. It's in the way you look at that's a beautiful baby because babies are beautiful. And I find myself saying, I hope she looks more and more like Brit as she gets older. That's what I say to myself. I pray to gods of all sorts of creeds and religions and hope for that every night. That's what I hope.
You ever play Dwarf Fortress? You ever heard of it?
No, I've never heard of it. Where the fuck did that come from?
I'm just asking a question, Michael.
No, I've never played Dwarf Fortress.
Well, first of all, don't look down on me like I'm some type of fool.
I didn't look down on you. I just thought it was a bizarre.
Now my likes are bizarre. That's what this is?
We have to do a whole other show after this. This is the energy you want to bring?
I'm just saying. I think you would like it. I think you would like Dwarf Fortress. It's
You know what I like? Is beer gardens and beer halls.
not a big beer guy. I'm not really a big drinker in general. And when I do drink, I drink bourbon. A little Knob Creek. Knob Creek, you want to get on this? Sponsor this show?
Is that what we're doing in the closing moments of our shows now? Just reaching out to...
Just reach to like somebody who may or may not be working at Knob Creek, who Tied very likely it just
I've
doesn't
have... I've been using
have...
it most of my life.
And what'd you say?
Tied with bleach. It's a quality product.
This entire show has been hostile, and you're
Chewy
you're
brand
just,
granola bars. I like that. I like a good granola bar. What else can we get?
If you could have one sponsor for this show, who would it be?
Whatever sponsor is the most lucrative and makes me feel the least awful about myself.
Okay. Aiden Gaspar, Alex Gardner, Amiel Kistner, Andre Chicagoff, Anthony Viola, Arch Williams, Bob Cowell, Chris B., Chris Habibi, Chris O'Connor, Dan Carozzi, Daniel DeGem, David L. Singer, Danny Santiago, Eric Cohn, Eric Carlson, Fancy Lawrence, Gabriel Vargas, 50, Igor Zetlovsky, James Dangles, John Reppy, Johnny Lowe, Keith Franchillo, Guy from Montana, Michael Silvers, Mike Offit, Panarin 2020, Stink Fleeman, Tall Guy Robert, Thomas Osa, and Trevor Kempner. All of you
are better than Joe.
All of you are beautiful. And you are what keeps me going.
No matter what they say.
Despite Mike.
And words, they're not going to bring you down.
Despite Mike continuing to attack me every day.
I want to push you into a hog pit and leg wrestle you.
Well, you see, this is what I'm talking about right now.
You and I both have a corn cob in our mouth. And whoever bites through and snaps his corn cob, that's who's going to win. Then we razzle.
We're wearing overalls,
and we just razzle.
Well, this show has...
Bubba Sparks, the hip-hop artist from the South?
I know Bubba Burgers.
And with that, we end the show.
Oh, was I supposed to end the show there?
Yeah, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Do you want to make some dirty, dirty man sounds?
No, I just love you. I'm sorry.
I love you, too. Sorry that the show was so hostile. By the way, thank you all for listening. This was...
It was fun. Michael Silvers on Twitter posted the stickers came.
Yes, we'll send your address so that you can get the stickers. But more importantly, outside of the stickers to you, you hand out greedy sons of bitches. The past week, I know it was the trade deadline and all, was our best two back-to-back most listened to shows, the flagship and the Q&A show after the trade deadline, and we had the best like 2-day, and then we have the most listens obviously when we release the shows. We had the best 2-day span that we've ever had.
Yeah, so thousands upon thousands of people heard me claim that your thighs were filled with cream.
Yes, they did. And with
and
you know
you
what, that's
I
think
show
that's
you that kind of affection.
I think that's where we need to end the show.
You and your creamy thighs,
Mike the Killer Murphy.